This is The World Tonight. Good evening, I'm Douglas Edwards, CBS News. Judge Sirica finally completed the selection of a jury today, and on Monday, the court will hear opening arguments in the Watergate cover-up trial. Fred Graham reports.
The jury that will decide if President Nixon's former aides conducted a criminal conspiracy to cover up Watergate is older, blacker, and more female than most. There are 9 women and 3 men, 8 blacks and 4 whites. Judge John Sirica told them they'll be locked up until their verdict, perhaps into 1975, and that until the testimony is over, they cannot so much as mention the case to anyone. In a document released later by Sirica, former President Nixon's doctor said a trip could seriously threaten Mr. Nixon's health and that he probably couldn't testify in Washington for 6 months or longer. Defendant John Ehrlichman insisted that Mr. Nixon's testimony be taken in California and videotaped for the jury. He demanded a trial delay to do this, but Sirica denied it. Defendant H.R. Haldeman said he also intends to subpoena Mr. Nixon and also demanded a trial delay. The jury was locked up together for the first of many weekends in a downtown motel, and the trial will begin with the lawyer's opening statements on Monday. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
The disciplinary board of the Washington State Bar Association recommended today that Egil Krogh be barred from practicing law in the state of Washington. Krogh has served time for his role in the Watergate scandal. Prime Minister Wilson said today that he can govern Britain with a slender majority the Labourites won in the House of Commons yesterday, but Wilson said it will be a hell of a job. Charles Collingwood has a report.
The cliff-hanging British election with its eyelash Labour Party majority is full of anomalies, not the least of which is that the majority Socialist Party has now come to power with only about 40% of the votes. The combined votes of the Conservative and Liberal and other parties thus represent an anti-socialist majority. Interestingly, many Conservatives regard this as the best possible outcome, short of the Conservative victory for which they had hoped. The argument runs that so narrow a majority will curb the socialist adventurism of the Labour Party, which is officially committed to wide-scale nationalization of industry and other extreme policies. Prime Minister Wilson, pleased, if not exactly flushed with victory, of course disagrees with this. He said today that his opponents would not dare press him too hard for fear of making themselves more unpopular with an election-weary public. He is sure his Labour team will find the right answers in time and continue on top. Charles Collingwood, CBS News, London.
Secretary of State Kissinger wound up his talks in Egypt last night and left Cairo early this morning for Damascus and talks with the Syrians. Marvin Kalb has a report.
After his arrival here in the Syrian capital, Kissinger immediately plunged into private talks with President Assad, all afternoon and well into the night before going on to Jordan. Syria is kind of odd man out. When the next phase of the negotiation begins, probably after the Arab summit meeting in Morocco later this month, it will involve Egypt, Jordan, and Israel, but not Syria. Assad knows this, and Kissinger is trying to counsel patience and caution as more and more Soviet arms pour into this Arab country. If there is a threat of renewed war anywhere in the Middle East, it is here. And once again, Kissinger is working against the clock. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, Damascus.
The House of Representatives defied President Ford today on the question of military aid for Turkey and thereby delayed the election recess that was scheduled to start today. Mariah McLaughlin reports.
Bags were packed, vacation plans and heavy campaign schedules were set, and then the House failed to go along with a request from President Ford that it modify its resolution, which called for an immediate cutoff of military aid to Turkey. A halt of arms now to Turkey, Mr. Ford said, would interfere with the negotiations to settle the Cyprus situation. The Senate earlier this week had gone along with that modification after President Ford indicated he would veto the measure to which it had been attached, a funding resolution for agencies who have run out of money. So the situation now is this. The recess, which was to begin tonight, won't. The President will veto the funding resolution, and then the Congress will try to override that veto. If it fails, the House will have to work to get another funding bill out of the Appropriations Committee. And so the recess begins to fade. Mariah McLaughlin, CBS News, Washington.
President Ford went to the hospital today and brought the First Lady back to the White House for further recuperation from her cancer surgery. Mrs. Ford expressed her thanks to the people who took care of her and who came to see her off.
I'm thrilled to death, and words are inadequate for all of the marvelous, marvelous messages, prayers, wonderful things I've heard from all over the country, in fact, all over the world. And it has really given me the spirit that I just can't explain how much it has really meant to me.
Mrs. Ford said her care had been terrific and great, and now she was doing what she had been looking forward to, going home to her family. Several major banks around the country lowered their prime rate to 11.5% today. Stocks shoved upward again on Wall Street again today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed around 658, up 10 points. Volume 20,090,000 shares. The average price per share was up 46 cents on the New York Exchange, up 13 cents on the American. Wall Street on This World Tonight. The high prices of just about everything are having an economic and cultural effect in the nation's schools. Terry Drinkwater has been investigating the situation in the Los Angeles area.
At Clover Avenue Elementary last year, the pumpkins and witches were cutouts of bright orange and black paper. This year, they're using old newspapers instead. The Los Angeles School District, like most others in the country, can't afford colored construction paper. And they can barely afford plain writing paper because it costs three times what it did a year ago. In many primary schools, each child has his own slate now, something not seen in most classrooms since our grandparents' day. Chalk cheaper than pencils, which have doubled in price in a year. Paper is even reused. Type right over what's already on the sheet, the teacher says. Even though the semester is only 2 months old, some districts throughout the country have already spent all the money allocated for a year for school supplies. Most everywhere in the months to come, if youngsters are going to have anything to write on at all, parents and the rest of us are going to have to pay much more in school taxes. Terry Drinkwater, CBS News, Los Angeles.
The long dispute over textbooks in Kanawha County, West Virginia, produced some scattered violence again today, and another resignation is in the works. Jed Duval has been covering the story.
For the second time in 2 days, another top school official has said he wants out of his job as a result of the continuing school book protest in Kanawha County, West Virginia. School Superintendent Kenneth Underwood said today he will resign, quote, when the mood strikes me. Underwood also said, as far as he's concerned, the school board can begin immediately to search for a successor. Underwood, one of the main targets of book protesters, thus joins Albert Anson, Jr., school board president. Anson, another of the targets, because he supported the books, quit last night in an effort to, as he put it, cool the controversy. Since school opened in early September, the fundamentalist faction of the county has been protesting 325 new books on grounds of religion and taste. The books are out of schools pending a study, but that compromise move hasn't satisfied some protesters, and the controversy, marked by occasional violence and arrests, continues. Jed Duval, CBS News.
We have the fifth and last in a series of reports on Vietnam tonight. In this one, Peter Collins tries to penetrate the mystery of North Vietnam. It is difficult to do that. There are few first-hand reports, but the attempt must be made, because what happens in the South is inseparable from what happens in the North. Peter Collins now, the fifth and final report in this series.
South Vietnam is facing grave military and economic problems. But in the other Vietnam, north of the 17th parallel, life is still much harder than in the South, with one big exception, and that is the North has peace. After the ceasefire 20 months ago, North Vietnam's major backers, Russia and China, decided to write off all the debts that had built up during the war. But intelligence sources here in Saigon report the Russians and Chinese insisted on one condition, a greater say in Hanoi's economic planning. They demanded population and economic surveys that revealed glaring mismanagement. Resources amounting to hundreds of millions of dollars had simply disappeared into the war machine. Throughout North Vietnam, thousands of people were discovered living where they were not supposed to be. A major reconstruction program was launched to repair the ravages of American bombing, and restore production to pre-war levels by 1976. The program is said to be falling far short of its goals. Although many roads have been repaired, daily electric power blackouts are still the rule in major cities. Despite controlled prices, inflation is estimated at 20% per year, and there's a thriving black market in Hanoi. Commodities are scarce, and more than half the daily rice ration is said to be grain filler. And North Vietnam relies more than ever on its allies, with fully one half of its food and all of its oil coming from the outside. Intelligence sources also report serious morale problems, in part because the Paris Agreement was presented as a victory, but North Vietnamese soldiers are still moving south. But in North Vietnam, there's no visible political dissent, and recent visitors to Hanoi report no sign of change in the goal of reunifying Vietnam under communist control. This is Peter Collins for CBS News, Saigon.
And that's the world tonight, Friday, October 11th. The producer is Richard Carlson. Have a good weekend. I'm Douglas Edwards, CBS News.